Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, I want to welcome David Dubine. He is creator of the Adapt 2030 Mini Ice Age video series on YouTube and the Mini Ice Age Conversations podcast. David, welcome. How are you tonight?
Doing well in the craziness that pervades our planet. And you see, I think there's a lot of interconnectedness here of grand solar minimum versus the distractions that we're seeing across the planet at the moment.
Yes, exactly. And that's exactly why I have you on tonight. We're going to discuss that craziness. It's in these planetary changes is something I cover regularly on my show. We're seeing this, and I believe it does coincide with the grand solar minimum. And one of the most fascinating aspects you discuss this is during these periods of time, we see empires fall. And like I've heard you say, this is probably what's happening with China right now. It's very convenient with what was happening there with the protests and the riots and everything else that's going on right now. And we're also going to be discussing what comes along with the grand solar minimum, extreme weather, the earthquakes, volcanoes, animal die-offs, all the things I talk about all the time. But David, it's your first time on. So tell us first a little bit about your background and what got you started with your research.
Just simply, I was a guy working, buying coffee in Myanmar. In Myanmar, formerly known as Burma, if I say Burma to you, you think of a hot weather, kind of jungly, maybe rainforesty type of environment. But when we were buying coffee down there, the coffee farmers were telling us of cold weather crop losses and damage to the plants and the beans themselves, the density of the beans. And I was a full 100% CO2 believer before that point. And then with real farmers on the ground that are, you know, producing coffee, telling us that it's the fourth year in a row they had freeze damaged, I just started to look into it, not to prove anything. I was just, from a business standpoint, you're looking at about 5 years for allocation or supply increases, you know, and losses here. And you're just trying to do a formula to see how much possible supply you could get. As your business grows, you want to make sure you have the supply in case somebody else orders larger volumes. Simply so business basic like this. And then I started to reach out to other people that had more knowledge about these cycles. And I stumbled into John Casey's work really quickly in my search in the first few weeks. And then I ended up talking to John a few times and, you know, we've become friends over the years. But that point was really after I saw his presentations and his solid understanding of cycles, because John Casey used to work for NASA and he was the lead investigator on the space shuttle. When after it exploded for NASA, he was the lead investigator for that. So his credentials within NASA and established, you know, hierarchy, large, well-known, very respected space and astronomy program across the planet here. When he starts saying cycles in the sun are repeating, we're going to have a huge problem with agriculture, and then he gets fired, loses his career because of that. That's a guy I want to talk to because he must have stumbled upon the truth and something happened there. So from that point forward, I really started to get a lot of pieces that were sinking together. And, you know, having lived in China and understand the collapse of the Chinese dynasties, then I just started to overlap it and say, all right, these dynasties were collapsing. Let's see if it is related to John's sun cycles that he's talking about, these grand solar minimums on 207-year cycles or approximately 410 to 414 years on super heavy or powerful cycles. And I just laid them over, and sure enough, even if you use Greenland Ice Core Survey Project 2.0 as the GISP2 ice core data set, IPCC references this one. If you look at the temperature dips and drops, it matches right where the Chinese collapsed as well. And then the light bulb went on and like, oh, wow. We're not going to be able to buy coffee anymore. And I might as well just shift off to do something else. And then that's the reason we're sitting here talking, because I found it such a game changer in the way life is moving forward. And now I knew somehow there would have to be massive distractions away from these crop losses that were forecast in this grand solar minimum to occur this year and next, to the point that everybody on the planet would understand and become aware of it. And what's at our doorstep right now as a massive distraction? Timing's too, I don't believe in coincidences that much for this timing to roll into the exact 1 year where this wake up and understanding and awareness of the global populace on our food supply and the narratives that, hey, the sun's driving the climate, not CO2, and we get the virus right now. I just can't believe it's random happenstance. Now, that's my opinion, though. You can agree or disagree with that.
I totally agree. And I think, you know, whether you believe it's a bioweapon or not, whether you believe it's dangerous or not, it's still being used as a tool. It's being used by these powers that be to push agendas and to lead us to the next stage of their plans, right?
Which is what? That's the whole thing. I understand it from the grand solar minimum. Prevent panic, grab control of the entire world's food supply while they can, end of it. But you, what you're talking about there, I'm really interested in what you think this end plan might be. I only have the part with the food and the population control by controlling the food supply. I'd love to hear what you have to say on the other realms of it.
Well, I mean, there's so many theories about what could possibly be going on. My personal belief, I think that depopulation is a big part of it. I think that they're going to eventually push for this. It could end up being a martial law situation. They could push for one world currency. They're talking about now that the coronavirus is being spread by the paper currency. So I saw a few stories about that the other day. I think that could be an agenda. And, you know, eventually if we have this collapse, this financial collapse, one world currency, eventually one world government. And, you know, that to me has been the plans all along. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, with the grand solar minimum, the planned population loss is because we couldn't grow enough food on the planet. We're going to be minus about 2 billion anyway out of the total, a quarter of the population of the planet. That was based rolling now until 2024 to 2028. So within these next 8 years, there was going to be a massive population loss anyway. Now add this thing in here. Collapse the economy, and then that's an excuse why your food's not delivered, why the food couldn't grow, why the fertilizer supply chain was broken off somewhere, the credit wasn't there. Now, this explains a lot of what could really move forward. And not to get too woo-woo, but you could cut off the fertilizer supply and the supply chains and then blame everything on the virus when the true game plan was to cut those supplies off because it would even limit further production of food on the planet to get a higher count on the end above that 25%. You know, if you were a sick, psychopathic, non-souled type of entity, that's the way you would go. But people like me and you, I'm not like that.
And we're seeing major hints at this food supply shortage already with the extreme weather we've seen over just this past year with the crop losses in the Midwest. You know, the farmers don't even know how to react to these changes that are occurring right now. It seems it's totally thrown off the way that they're even farming. And the extreme weather patterns are destroying the crops, not only here, but all over the world. We're seeing it all over the world. I want to get to that in a minute. But first, I know you left Taiwan because of this whole situation, right? How was it there? Or how is it there? Do you know?
Yeah, I speak to people there almost every day. What you're seeing evolving in the United States right now, the way it's hitting, it was like that 3 weeks ago about 3 weeks ago in Taiwan. So when I came back here to the United States, I thought, you know, I just bought myself 3 weeks of safety, but we are back at the exact same point. Actually, not the exact same point. Wait until it rolls a whole nother week until next weekend. And that was at the point I decided to leave. When we are at that point next weekend and you see the news feeds and the weird things going on, if you're on an island that's importing 98% of what it needs every day, you'll kind of understand why I'm taking a break out of there. Back to China, though, I firmly believe that all the numbers that you're seeing are complete fabrication. I know for sure there's no preparation in the fields going on for the planting. And could I share a screen with you quick and just dive into?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, let me go with my screen share here. You know, and for those of you out there that understand some of my work here, and there it is.
Yeah, I think China's a perfect place to start. That's actually where I want to start with this whole situation too.
You know, I'm going to have to go to the picture editor here. So think about Kansas. I'm trying to put a correlation here. So think about growing wheat in America or the heaviest grow zones in the United States. So if I say Kansas, you kind of understand that that's in the center of the center of our agricultural production in the United States. But unbeknownst to a lot of people, Wuhan and that whole Hubei area is the exact same thing. That's the Kansas of their country. And right now they're not planting. They're not getting ready to plant, and they are not anywhere remotely ready to get the fields in order. And if I could, I don't understand why I cannot get, oh, there it is. All right, so I'm hoping that you can see this. Can you see the screen?
Yes, we can see how the virus has spread in China, yes.
Perfect, let me make that, there you go. All right, so where you're looking at is Hubei province, top left, and you'll see it's very highlighted there. It was the epicenter of the province. Now, that is in the middle of ag country in China. So when we look there, that's going to be number 23 on this map. The heavier the green is, the more dense the agriculture production is out of certain areas. And if you look up at the top left, the darker the green is, the more major the crop area is. It would be like our Kansas, Nebraska, Illinois, Oklahoma, or whatever, Indiana for wheat, or sorry, for corn, and then Kansas for wheat. We're looking at the exact same things here. They're all locked up at the moment. They're still not able to go out. I talked to somebody from Shanghai just yesterday, and they said it was the first day they were allowed out of their apartments to go buy food, and they needed a special blue chit or a blue piece of paper. Now, that's in Shanghai. It is still completely locked down out in Area 23, Area 3, Area 4. And let me see if I can get you a map here of China. There you go. So when we look at Hubei and Henan, Jiangxi, Anhui, Zhejiang, and Jiangsu, these are all major crop zones. And down south, you're going to see Guangdong and Guangxi. That's just right out of Hong Kong area there in Guizhou. So again, let's take a look at some of the crops and understand the names that you've heard in the news, like Guangdong, Shenzhen, and Hong Kong in these areas. Let me see if I can get into the rice map. Oh, I don't have the rice map on here. All right, anyway, I'll leave it with the ag regions right here. So the dark, the green is more where you're going to... So this dark green area here, there's nothing going on preparing the fields up here. This is the major grow area for China, period. So I don't know exactly what they're going to be able to grow this year, but it's sure not going to be to the full extent that they have been normally growing over these last, you know, decades, plural. And then when we look down at the corn here, the corn kind of loops off at the very end where my mouse is, and we get down on Guangdong and Guangxi. That's a huge rice-producing area. They're completely locked down too. So the rice isn't being... anything done with it, they already would be in the fields because the temperatures down south here versus up here in Henan are completely different. It's already ready to plant down there. And the corn regions here, when we get out to Sichuan and Yunnan, not only are the locusts coming into Yunnan from Myanmar on the west side of the map here by my mouse coming or my cursor coming in, the locusts are entering into Yunnan right now, and they should be into the grow zone. Also, the armyworm last year wiped out 35% of all the corn crops in China, and that is still in the soil, both the fall armyworm and the spring armyworm. So they're expecting a second infestation through the corn crops this year. No planting going on. And then somehow they are going to be able to, I don't know, have food production? I don't get it. How are we going to be able to supply all of them, the food, China buyers, when we can't get the fertilizers either, because most of the base constituents or that we use for the fertilizers for the recombination here in the States, the different NPK formulas based on soil type in the area of our country, we can't get that fertilizer this year either. So it's this double feedback loop kind of whipping around. They can't plant, their factories are down, we can't import the fertilizers, we need to grow enough food to supply China if they can't grow the food. So we're just in this downward spiral loop at the moment. Because please remember, the fertilizer is not like 60,000 tons sitting in my back shed waiting for the planting season. That stuff is ordered the year that it is used, which is right now, and it's not coming.
Now,
thanks
we're
for
not
rant.
No, that's perfectly fine. We're not hearing anything come out of China anymore. For a while, we were hearing, daily updates, and then they start to shut down everything. We're not hearing anything anymore. Today, I saw a story on Yahoo News about some Chinese were caught faking that they're going back to work and going back to factories and stuff like that, that's very interesting. But what I want to discuss is, okay, the death rate in some areas, especially in the ground zero in Hunan, and then they have a high death rate in Iran, and they have a high death rate in Italy. So why is it in certain areas are we seeing a higher death rate than others? I hear plenty of theories saying that there is some sort of 5G connection. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, that's to be seen. And I'm going to make a bold call here. If it is to be seen and there's any connection between 5G, I am going to say look for a country, Gabon in West Africa. Because I did a whole bunch of posts on my Patreon channel about the air traffic. They have direct routes from Wuhan and areas in China directly over to Ethiopia into the Bole International Airport. Now, you would think with that much inbound traffic of Chinese that could possibly be sick over these last couple weeks or even a couple months, that Ethiopia should be off the rails infected, but they're not. You know where the next infected place is in Africa? Nigeria, but Nigeria just turned on their 5G in December. And then the second most heavily networked area with 5G is Gabon. Now, nobody's even barely heard of Gabon. So if you're starting to see huge infection rates coming out of a super small, tiny country in West Africa called Gabon, it definitely has something to do with 5G. If not, then maybe that 5G thing is not really the connection, because the networks in Gabon have been on approximately the same time as they have over in Nigeria since mid to late December of 2019. So if there's a relationship, you're going to look for this super way outlier, completely never heard of place to have a super high infection rate. And I think that would be the catalyst there if there were some 5G connection. Look for Gabon. If you see it, something's going on.
And before we move out of this conspiratorial area here.
Yeah, it's unprovable at the moment, but it's very possible, though, because that frequency really interferes with your body, especially up at 60 gigahertz, and it really have an effect on the molecular electric bonds of even oxygen molecules, which in the atom, at the atomical structure, interferes with those electrons. So 60 gigahertz, what's it doing to your body if it's breaking down electrical bonds between two oxygen atoms? What's it doing to you?
Exactly. And now I want to stay kind of in this conspiratorial range here. A few weeks before the outbreak, the WHO and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation did Event 201, this massive simulation for a pandemic. And of course, it was with coronavirus. So, I mean, with the combination of that and all these strange occurrences we're seeing, it makes it very, there's a lot of red flags surrounding it. And it's no wonder that these conspiracies come up, but the connections are there. And it's hard to not look at that,
And I would say absolutely everybody out there needs to watch all six of those breakout sessions. They're giving you the crystal ball for how it's going to play out. So if you're smart enough to watch the sessions, you should be smart enough to be able to protect yourself on how these things are being implemented. Because if you watch that now, especially the wrap-up video, for those of you who've never seen it and you've seen this whole trajectory of things moving in the news and the build-up and the mitigation measures and all these things, when you watch that wrap up, you are going to fall on the floor of how similar it has played out comparatively to what they predicted and how they were going to make it move with industry, economy, travel, the flow of information, and the protection measures or the mitigation. You're going to absolutely fall on the floor and go, no way. I don't know if you had that same reaction, because I didn't watch it until several weeks into it. And when I saw it, what is this thing?
Yeah. Well, somebody told me about it early on. So I watched it early on and I was blown away. I'd like to start making some of the Grand Solar Minimum connections. Now, for those that don't know, maybe if you could explain a little bit more about what exactly is occurring during the Grand Solar Minimum. It not only affects the planet, but it affects us electromagnetically. It affects our consciousness. Everything is kind of shifting during this time period. If you could just kind of sort of explain a little bit about what's going on right now with the Grand Solar Minimum to help the audience understand.
So first you have to understand that big thing off to the left, that big yellow ball that's 1.2 million times larger than the Earth, that big thing over there, it goes through cycles. And those cycles affect our Earth drastically in terms of electromagnetism. So it's an electrical frequency, but then we also have the regular base magnetism. So think about the hemispheres of your brain. Think about the Earth itself. The crust on the Earth, how is that crust not spinning on top of the magma, just a free-floating, free-spinning ball? Something's locked it into place. It's the same forces that the sun have connected to us. Like these magnetic field lines, when the sun sends out a big charged array of particles and it creates those aurora start coming down on our poles in both North and South Pole. They come down those magnetic field lines. So we already know that when the magnetic field lines come off the Earth, that we're directly connected to the sun. So if the sun were to step down in its charge or activity state, our Earth is not going to stay where we are now. It's also going to change down to match what the sun's charge is, or electrical activity, phase state, if you want to term it as this. The changes are vast. Now we're going to start to see a lot of electrical changes, because that's what it's all about, is the electrical frequency from our sun, vibration and frequency, is changing, downstepping. We are also feeling like that Schumann resonance went to 170 last week. Like these are some of the changes that you would expect, and human psyche would go right along with that, along with these massive Earth changes. Why do you think we're having such an uptick in volcanic activity? Such an uptick in sinkholes, an uptick in earthquakes and animals migrating in the wrong way. This is all based on the magnetism. You know, however that thing is pointed north-south, along with the electrical frequency from our sun holding it all together here, our crust is behaving differently. We got ground-to-sky lightning, incredible sprites in the atmosphere, white auroras with no solar wind, cracks in the magnetic field of our planet. There's a lot happening right now, and okay, that's on the very largest of scales, but you hit it on the head, no pun intended, but our brains are electro frequency responds and antenna as well. So you see routinely through history, and the best way I can describe it is go back in a history book and look where the greatest amount of change on people questioning how they were led or how they were ruled or how their societies were structured happens during these times, because just I think the way we perceive reality or something, just the electrically in our brains is firing differently. So then we start to see, you know, that's why there's been so many in the last year, millions and hundreds of millions of people saying, hey, wait, this structure that we have now doesn't work real good. 20 yeah. something countries all asking for governmental change at the same time before the virus came. Pretty strange.
Definitely. And something else we see coinciding with this, the mainstream media actually covered it for a little while and then we heard nothing about it, is the fact that our magnetic north is rapidly moving. That seems to be coinciding with this event. And it brings the danger of a magnetic reversal, I would think. And, you know, with that comes all kinds of cataclysmic possibilities. You know, our entire power grid could be gone. We could be set back to the 1800s. So this is something else we have to worry about that's coinciding with this, right?
Yeah, no motors would work either, because everything's oriented north-south. So every possible thing that has any electricity flowing through it would no longer work. I mean, that would be cataclysmic. That would take us back to the Stone Age, you know? So what do you think about the changes that's happening in society with people's awareness growing because of these frequency changes off of the sun that we're starting to experience now in earnest, where the entire global populace is feeling something's changing right now. There's not one person that's not feeling it. Now, intuitively, in your sixth sense or your survival sense, whatever you like to call it, we're in a vast sea of change at the moment. So
definitely, yeah, I've noticed this, and to me, it's been occurring since 2012. That's when it started. I started feeling it. I started noticing people around me more recently, just waking up to things, questioning things. Some people becoming more spiritual. Even my parents, they're in their 80s and they are realizing things. They're coming, asking me questions. They're watching my show. You know, my dad will sit down and watch a few episodes and then he'll call me and ask me a few questions. And it's like, wow, you know, I never thought I'd see a time like this, but it's happening. I think it's happening for the perfect reason, because everything is shifting and we have to, I think it's a form of preparation for us, for what's to come next, because our whole way of living is going to be different, within a few years. Everything is going to change, just like we were talking before, you know, no more cell phones, no more watching your favorite sports team at night. We have to go back to our old ways of living, and we have to do it soon, because this is occurring, you know, more rapidly all the time.
Yeah. And how, as a world structure of government, United Nations, independent nations, you know, led by leaders or presidents, whatever you like to call them, premiers, how would you try to stop the global panic? Because if everybody understood what you and I just said there, there'd be vast changes happening before the changes actually really arrive. So how would you try to control the global populace moving into this? Either there'd be one of two ways. You're trying to work with the global populace to bring them in so things still function into the challenge or into the changes. Or it would be the second B, where you're trying to mislead it, use a narrative to try to derail the changes. So which would it be? And, you know, if you're, you know, think about United Nations and all these global agendas moving forward, which is it going to be? And how would you control a population that is going to freak out if they're not able to adjust to change and understanding that their lives are going to be, so everything they worked for is not going to be there. The way they perceive reality and things, then just daily lives are going to be completely different. There'll be not so much stability that most of us have grown up, at least in the United States, with for the last three generations. It just won't be there. So how do you work and kind of smooth and massage an entire global population into something completely different without creating mass panic?
Something I want to talk about that I notice that's happening right now with these planetary changes. It seems like the extreme weather, the earthquakes, the volcanoes, it's coming in waves, in little cycles. Like for a while, we'll have some normal patterns. The earthquakes and volcanoes will go down. And then at one point, I saw like there was 84 volcanoes either on alert or erupting at you know, for a few months at a time. This was last year and the year before, and now we're back down. And it seems to, it you know, each cycle, it gets a little bit more intense. Is this something that we're going to be seeing in the coming years, is just these cycles coming, going, and becoming more intense as we go along?
Yes, and expect the next intensification during this summer. And as we roll through, it's going to get really intense and lay off and really intense and lay off until the year 2024, where it's going to be the exact same planetary geometry or the way the planets are in the heavens, with the gas giants creating a square and our Earth exactly in the center of it. Electromagnetically, all those big, you know, Saturn, Jupiter, and the sun pulling at us. This lineup has not been seen since 79 AD. So when you think of, and it's only 1 degree off arc off of the lineup in 79 AD. So as we go through, each time we come around for the yearly, Jupiter's going to come with us tugging a little more. So the closer we get to Jupiter and it rolls through that, it's going to get really intense this summer, and then it should let off. But then each successive year, it's going to get much more intense, like you talk about, especially when we come around where all the magnetic action is in the quadrant.
I'm glad you said that. You mentioned the planetary alignments. That's what I was going to ask you about. Is how much is these alignments? Are these alignments affecting our weather patterns and things like that, and the earthquakes and volcanoes? How much are these alignments actually affecting these changes we're seeing right now?
Well, I'm going to say that because everything is electromagnetic, when these changes come, the jet streams, the cloud cells, and everything, the intertropical convergence zone, these are all electromagnetism that's created. It's electrical patterns that are moving those things around. So the more intense or the less intense that regular flow going into the system is, it's going to have a drastic effect. So right now, these jet streams are moving into new areas because the magnetosphere is weakened considerably, not to the point where you're like, oh, everything's going to end, but it's weakened to the point where jet streams can now move into new positions. Now think about that. These jet streams are trying to move into new positions, and that sometimes they're folding in on each other, or sometimes you're getting the incredible dip. You know, you're used to hearing, what's that, the polar vortex, but there's an opposite one called the equatorial vortex. Well, the same thing's happening where air from the equator is penetrating way up into the Arctic and coming. So the polar vortex comes down and comes up and it pushes down into Florida, Cuba, really cold, northern Mexico or whatever. But then there's also from the equator pushing all the way up to Greenland and further north up into, you know, Scandinavian countries from the equator. So the frequency lines are becoming much more intense. And these jet streams are overlapping on top of each other, hence all these massive, massive rainstorms. You can call that an atmospheric compression event, but it's all electrically based. So with the changes in our sun, it's really going to get intense in 2028, around 2030 as well. We have seen nothing yet. This is like the warm-up inning stepping into this. So the first major, major changes that you'll see on this planet are beginning now. And it was going to roll through, and it's going to get really intense in 2023. And I'm looking for this chart right here, right now, to show you the lineup for 2024, because this will be a reset for so many things on the planet electrically. And I don't know about our power grids, but there's going to be massive volcanic eruptions, big earthquakes, all kinds of things happening in 2024. That's before the real dropout occurs in 2028 to 2030. Like Valentina Zarkova was saying, it's going to get so incredibly nasty that we won't be able to grow much food at that point. So governments right now need to start stockpiling for 2028 events for 4 years when we can't grow food, or we'll have a very limited ability to grow food comparatively to today, which is already tumultuous at best. But they're talking about 10 to 20% maximum of what we grow today is going to be available, because the growing season will be so out of kilter by that point. So take now, that for what it's worth, I guess.
When I look up at the sun and I see that it's white, and I remember it being yellow as a child, mm-hmm. Is that something that is because of the grand solar minimum?
Well, I'm going to say that's a frequency change on a phase. So going from the yellow to the white, there's been an optical change, but that's frequency. So John Casey, in his book, Dark Winter, the very first version, he had more of a blue tinge on the sun. So many people are theorizing that it's going to color spectrum will change once more into more of a blue hue. Now, are they talking about blue star Kachina? I doubt it. Maybe that's the comet that's coming through in 2021, K2. That's the most electrically active comet, and it's blue, and it's going to be about this big in the heavens, daytime or nighttime, blue, that's going to come through our solar system here. But imagine if our sun turns a tinge of blue, where you notice the color change from yellow to white. Now, what if you notice it just as discernibly, it went from white to blue? How is that going to have an effect on the human psyche? Oh, our sun just turned blue. Huh? Right. You think people are going to continue to go to work and pay their taxes?
Well, I think the yellow change was such a gradual change, most people don't notice. I mean, you know, people in our community notice, but, you know, most people don't. And I wanted to ask you about chemtrails. What are your thoughts on chemtrails? Maybe possible purposes? Are they trying to help? Are they trying to hurt? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the geoengineering thing. If you look at two ice flows, there's an author pen name Morpheus, good choice in the name. But he was talking about cosmic radiation management. So if we get all these extra cosmic rays, galactic cosmic rays pounding in on the planet, creating more clouds, like Heinrich Svensmark's works talks about, he was saying that geoengineering is just one layer of the onion. There's a multipurpose program going on. Geoengineering is just one part of that. It's also could be used for cosmic radiation management, because the way it was explained to me, now, again, take it for what it's worth. You can do your own research on this. The nanoparticulates are made of different metals, barium, strontium, aluminum. But when those cosmic rays come in, they're a charged particle. When they hit one of those pieces of nanometal in the sky, they lose their charge. And they also lose the ability for anything else to form around it to create a cloud. So the whole thing was an A or a B choice for human psyche again. So I'll give you the two choices. One, you come clean and we start to see the geoengineering program and we say, hey, it's a military thing. And you know, the websites talk about it and say, if we get organized, we can stop the Air Force from doing this, the polluting the skies. They're creating all these rain problems. We can stop geoengineering if we come and we organize together. Or choice B, we're putting those nanometals up there because the amount of galactic cosmic rays coming in is going to cause a whole new cloud band to form in the atmosphere. And every single rainstorm is going to be a once in a thousand year flood. And if we don't do that, and if we stop, the climate's going to go into the once in a thousand year event every storm. So I want you to keep going to work and pay your taxes, please.
Yeah, that, probably seems likely.
So what do you think that might work there? Let me see if I can share this out for you here.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm trying to bring this up a sliver here. All right, so this is what I created this. This is one of the alignments. This is a, there you go. I'm going to try to pull this down so you can see it. All right, so the date on this where it said 578 and 79, that is from something different. So as we take a look down here, bottom, the left side is 1,500 years ago. Now, notice how the gas giants are there. We got Saturn on the right, and we got Uranus, Neptune, and Jupiter, and then we have the Earth in the center right there. So it makes kind of like an Earth sandwich, if you will. But then we come over to 2024, and we have the exact same setup again. When you go back to 578 in the late antique little ice age, they had the most volcanic eruptions going off where the sunlight was blocked out for 10 years. Sulfur dioxide was across the planet to the point where it caused some sickness. And we're repeating this again. So the electromagnetic tug is going to get worse and harder and more deep and more effects each year as we come up to this 2024 date in October. So think about this for a second as planets move around. Now, Jupiter's going to be following with us the whole time. So Jupiter only takes, 7 years to spin around there. We take one. But these outer giants, they take forever to go around. You know, looking at something like Neptune, takes 100 years to go around once. So Jupiter's screaming through the heavens there comparatively to the other ones. So our Earth and Jupiter are moving around, I'm not going to say at the same time, but very closely moving around that. And each time that we zoom around, Jupiter's getting closer and closer to creating that setup there. So if you get the solar diagram, so what's interesting is they took this particular vision view off of solar system scope after a lot of people started pointing out the same thing. You can still go to solar system scope, but you won't see the visuals like this. They'll just put it as little dots, and they made it so you can't put the outer planets like this to get the real alignment. You might have to go to JPL, that's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and use their solar dynamics model out there. But do it yourself and watch the Earth spin around Jupiter each time as Jupiter starts to get into this alignment. Really heavy effects starting next year with this electro connection between the sun, Jupiter, and ourselves, along with the other planets out there.
Now, what should people expect in the next coming decade? I mean, how bad are things going to really get? What can people look for?
Well, here I was bringing this chart here to maybe just give you an indication of what it's going to be like. The malware bytes is coming up again. There we go. So on the left here, it's just as it is on the chart from Valentina Zarkova, but to try to put it into some perspective when you can see that line of 2020 to 2021. Remember, there's a lag time of about 9 months or so, because when the sun does its canceling waves magnetically on the sun, it's going to take a little bit of effect before our Earth responds magnetically to those changes. They're not exactly instant. There's a little lag time. But look how much change there's going to be just between the blue box, which was last year, comparatively we're moving into this year and next, that purple box. So if you think about everything you said to me, like, oh, there was vast Earth changes last year, massive this, massive that, we still got to go through at least a doubling of it again before we get to those 2 years that are going to be equal, 2022 and three. Plus, we're going to get the all the magnetism from the outer planets on top of this is like an next wild card on top of that too. This is just electromagnetic canceling waves on the sun when the hemispheres of the sun cancel each other out, and that in turn has an effect on our Earth. That's just this. That's not the outer planets doing their thing along with this. So we're coming into something that really it hasn't been witnessed in thousands of years here, which would make it kind of understandable why governments are doing what they're doing, you know, and why there's other narratives out there to try to get you not to look at things like this, because you might change your spending habits, pull your money out of the bank, do all kind of crazy things you would never do. Change my lifestyle, change the way I live my life for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So what do you think they're going to do as far as this pandemic thing? Do you think they're going to keep playing this card and see where it goes and see how far they can take it as far as, you know, ramping up the fear, possibly corralling people, quarantines? I mean, how far do you think they're going to take just this portion of it, just this little virus portion?
Long enough to explain away the food shortages.
Okay.
Now, see what's happening with that whole subset of stuff over there. That's a distraction. You listening right now need to come over to the right over here, get out of this distraction, learn how to grow your own food, get ready for these changes that are happening with the sun. All that is meant to lock down the food supply and make sure there's an accounting of it. Move it over to the blockchain so they know exactly every grain of rice where it's moved by the kilogram across a container somewhere globally, digitized. Paid for digital currency, but you need to be taking care of yourself and your families. Learn as many skills as you can. The old, like you talked about, 1800s, go back to canning. Learn how to preserve food, because there's going to be an abundance of food in some seasons. No matter how bad it gets, there's always going to be that apple tree down the street that drops like a ton of apples. And then at the same time, you're going to need to learn how to grow food, because if you can grow it, that's a tradable, and then you could save the seeds for next year and you could sprout and do a bunch of microgreens and all kind of stuff in between with it. But you need the basic skill of how to grow it first. So to answer that short question and a long answer, they're going to keep running with it long enough to lock down a lot of these things that they would need to lock down during the grand solar minimum food supply chain.
Okay. Now, for the last few minutes that you have, that's what I want to talk about is what we can do to prepare for everything, especially here in the United States. What can people start doing right now? They say they have nothing. They don't know how to farm. They don't know how to grow their own food. They've been in this system for so long, and they're just waking up, and they're scared now. They're scared of the future that they see. So where can they start?
They can start by going to their supermarket and buying a bag of lentils, and then get online and quickly learn how to sprout those out or turn those into microgreens in your kitchen in the first 7 days. And start with the easiest things first. Go down to your local supermarket and see what kind of beans are there. You know, some of my favorites for bringing up to microgreens and being able to eat those are the black-eyed peas. I mean, there's an enormous amount of beans and seeds out there that you can go get bulk for like a pound of something for $2. And you can come home and turn that into 7 or 8 pounds of green vegetable matter in weeks. And it's so fun to watch it grow that, you know, get on the internet, learn, just type in top 10 easiest microgreens to grow, and then go try to find the seeds out in your store somewhere. You can order an enormous amount of stuff online. You don't even need anything. You can just use a bowl in your house. You don't even have to buy high-tech sprouting jars and all this kind of stuff. You need about $2 worth of seed and your mind to make that sprout out in the first week. And once you do it, you're going to realize, wow, that was really easy. Hey, and I got too much. why don't I go see if I can plant some of that out back? Because what I notice is when I have a big tray of microgreens growing, if I'm not eating them regularly, if I can't give them away, some of them will get really big, and those are your starter plants right there. So then learn how to take those starter plants and put them out in your garden. Or just, if you don't have a garden, go buy like a $5 hoe somewhere and learn how to, or a shovel or a rake or something to move that grass out of the way so you can be able to learn how to plant something in there. And it's really that simple. To plant a garden costs you nothing because you already have a big yard anyway. Most Americans have big yards. Most Canadians have big yards, you know? Now, and everything's for free at your fingertips on the net. So to say, well, I don't know how to do it. Don't tell me that. Do not tell me that. Go to the net and find it. Oh my gosh. If you tell me, oh, I can't, I don't know what, I'm going to say internet, you know?
Right. I mean, you could just search YouTube. It has all the answers.
Anything.
There.
There's thousands of videos out there. Thousands.
Yeah, definitely. Something I forgot to ask you about that I wanted to is people living on coastlines. Is that something to worry about? Should people start looking at moving further inland, say especially east, west coast, Gulf states? Are we going to be looking at major increases in water levels?
Not as the IPCC says, oh, the oceans are going to keep rising. Now, if you're talking about cataclysm types of things, perhaps. But, you know, that's Douglas Vogt's specialty there with the cataclysms on the cycles as well. Will we see a couple cometary impacts into the sea? Maybe. Because what's known about these grand solar minimums is there's always an enormous amount of space debris that seems to come in contact with our planet during these cycles. You'll find it routinely. If you go back in history, and I encourage everybody to look in a history book, go back to the 1600s, then go back in 1200s, 1280 is a good one. That's the collapse of the Tang Dynasty, or the collapse of the Yuan Dynasty in China. 800 AD, like the classical collapse of the Tang Dynasty in China. Go back through history on these 400-year cycles and see, okay, the empires, the emperors, the fiefdoms, kingdoms, whatever, they all collapse on these certain time frames, about 400 years. But notice in history, look through and see what kind of calamities came with these collapse. And you're always going to find something like the heavens rained down and we thought the entire heavens were pouring onto the earth kind of stories. And then they would make paintings and tapestries and all kind of stuff. You'll find these accounts in every grand solar minimum. So I don't see why this one would be no different, where there'd be an enormous amount of space debris where it coming through like a debris field out in space. And we just hit it at one time in the right day and the right time. Southeast U.S. in 1813, I think, something like that. They had this tapestry where they're showing, it was a lithograph, actually. It was about 10,000 shooting stars per hour. And they thought the heavens were falling, right? So you always get these kind of stories during grand solar minimums. So coastal, maybe there's a bigger rock that slams the water. But otherwise, you know, just in terms of bigger storms are going to be rolling in, more freaky storms. Because you saw this year with all the cyclogenesis and bombogenesis off the East Coast, it's the highest number ever recorded. So right. There are real changes here. They're trying to explain it away so you don't panic. Because see, to sell you CO2 narrative is a way better option than to try to explain a grand solar minimum to the masses. Again, right. You can't do anything about the grand solar minimum. You can't stop it. It's in play. You got to just deal with it. But CO2 makes it like, oh, we as a human, we can stop it. We can do something about it. But you're just giving false hope. It's not CO2. It's not you. It's the sun.
Definitely. And one more thing I wanted to touch on before we close out is the volcanoes. If we have enough eruptions, is this going to cause a sort of like nuclear winter at some point during this process?
If everybody would read about the Tambora eruption from Indonesia that caused something called a year without a summer, that would be your best indicator as to what could happen with an enormous amount of lava. Well, if there was something like Tambora, we'd experience the same thing again. Like we as a global civilization today, could we handle that? How about growing food in your house? Maybe if you had a year's worth of seeds or 2 years worth of seeds and you could sprout and grow indoors, you could probably handle that. I don't know. How do you think the society is going to move? Because you asked me about the pandemic thing. I'm very interested to see what the response might be. Like, what do you think the response is going to be from this point forward? Because you see the incredible amount of media ran up and like it's expanding. There's 4,000 people quarantine. And they're really pushing this whole quarantine thing down your throat now.
It's hard to tell because in my area, there's no panic. People aren't even really noticing this, what's going on with the coronavirus. They're just going around with their lives. I haven't seen shortages in my grocery store. I have talked to you about a certain cell phone provider that doesn't have phones anymore. Because of the factory in China shut down, they can't get phones. But other than that, in my general area, I don't see panic. But on the media, I'm seeing people. I saw a video right before we got on of people fighting over toilet paper.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it's causing panic, and I don't know what the full extent is going to be because I'd like to see how this plays out. It seems that the spreading has kind of slowed down. The death rate's kind of slowed down, and things kind of seems kind of even off right now. So I'm interested in seeing how this is going to play out in the next coming weeks to see how people are going to react to it, because we're getting mixed reactions depending on what part of the country you're in. Really, that's what I'm seeing right now. You know, what do you think?
Yeah, and I'm really kind of debating whether is the media using this to push everybody to panic buy so then the government can step in and say, wait a second, you're panic buying too much. You need our help. We'll control everything from now. Everybody gets one.
Yeah,
who's getting wagged here, you know? I mean, there's a purpose behind all those new media stories.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, it's disturbing some of the things we're seeing, you know, with people panic buying and fighting and stuff like that. So we're definitely in for a very unsure future. We live in times that I never thought I'd see in my life. Very fascinating times, but very terrifying at the same time. So thank you, David, for coming on tonight. Before you head out, for anyone that wants to find more about your work, give us social media, website, YouTube, all that. I'm also going to have the links in the description and everything like that.
Yeah, thank you. If you found this conversation interesting, please get prepped out because everybody else is panic buying. You don't want to be the last one in the store. And see, I hate to say that because now I'm part of saying go out and buy stuff, which gets you into the loop too. But then where do we sit? Do you sit back there and go, well, everybody's panic buying, I'm not going to go buy anything? Or do you go, damn, I need to go out and buy some stuff because everybody else is buying everything and I don't want to get left without anything at the end of the day? Adapt 2030 is where you can find a lot of my work. And I talk about these cycles. Food shortages are part of every grand solar minimum. So how the government's going to have to handle these food shortages is where it's going that direction right at this second. So if it's panic buying and government has to step in and control all the supply chains, all the food distribution, that was expected anyway, what they were going to have to do to keep the populace from rioting in the streets, from food riots, because there wouldn't be enough food. And now we're kind of at that same point where it seems like they're doing the grabbing now and they're not going to wait until 2023. And you got to realize that's only two and a half years away. So it's right in the same timelines. But if you like podcasts, I do a full half hour podcast talking about this where I ride along with, you know, a guest like yourself or anything else, you know, like Chris and I, we'll cut this into two different sections or two different 30 minute podcasts and you can listen to it in audio. That's on many Ice Age Conversations over anywhere you can find across the net, Libsyn, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Intune, Spreaker, or anywhere else you have it. I've been really spending a lot of time out there. Oilseedcrops.org. And what I try to do there is, the videos that I put out, I have somebody help me get the transcript from the video, and then we insert the slides in there. So if you want to take a look at like some of these graphics we had tonight, those are, you can click on the article and every single screen grab or every slide I used in a video is up on the website, but it's in a written form. So then I made it. I used the highest resolution graphics I could. So all you have to do is copy it. I left the PDFs for it because even after it's a blog post, but then I turn it into a PDF. So if you want to share it and give it to your friends, like you're talking about your dad, it's meant to share information. I want you to share it around. So instead of sending somebody to the website, just say, hey, I got this PDF. And I try to cross-pollinate all this material to make it easy for you to share to other people, whether it's a link or whether it's a PDF. Because, you know, we're all in this together. There's nowhere to go. And you're getting a real good indication that we are so totally in this together now. And the more prepared you are, the more prepared other people are. And it's all about the food. It always has been. And this whole virus is a full distraction. So you're now the grand solar minimum is starting to get some traction. Now it's like six levels buried again. So you're on your own, and I encourage you to do your research. Don't listen to me. I want you to try to disprove everything I say tonight, because by trying to disprove it, will absolutely send you on the right track of, wait a second, there's something else vastly going on here. Cycles of thousands of years, cycles of time, cycles of economy, civilization cycle, economic cycle, they're all culminating right now. And there needs to be control over this. They're not going to let you, this populace, go blindly into this thing here, because power wants to retain power. It's never going to let it go free if it can hold on to you. And if I might, before I go, I want to interject here.
Yeah.
The woo-woo factor, since all these energetic changes are happening, frequency and vibration changes are causing all of these changes. Perhaps 5G is there to inject another frequency to interfere with this wave field that we're in. Because these changes that are coming are natural patterns. They're meant to stimulate and wake and change our psyche and abilities and thinking and cognitive, just the way we perceive reality. They're meant for us to uplift and like vibrationally lift out. And then 5G comes with all the, you know, the internet, and we have all these signals around us, the phones, the regular towers prior to 5G. But now 5G is ramping up across the entire planet at the exact same year. So is it an interference frequency that they're trying to, I don't know, change something down where this flow that would have generally just completely awakened humanity and all of their power would have been eroded in seconds, because all of us would have woken up in the same time, versus throwing frequency waves in to interfere with that? I don't know, maybe that's too woo-woo, but I will sign off there. David Dubin, thanks for listening. What do you think about that 5G? Like, the interference wave is really... I've had so many people tell me, hey man, maybe they're injecting these different kind of gigahertz frequencies to interfere with the electromagnetic frequency changes of the sun.
Thought
like
about
Bose that. Headsets, they're trying to offset something, cancel it, amplify it or something, right?
Yeah, or slow the process of whatever is occurring. We could have a whole nother show about that. But definitely, we're going to have you back on. You're going to keep us updated about this whole process. And thank you so much for coming on tonight. That was fantastic information, important information. Everybody needs to share this.
See you next time. Bye.